Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Wall Street has provided $15 million just in the last reporting period to the Secretary's super PAC.
I've taken them on. I took on the drug companies. I took on the insurance companies. In 2006, Senator Sanders supported indefinite detention for people facing deportation and stood with the Minutemen vigilantes.
No, I do not support vigilantes, and that is a horrific statement to me. And I said, welcome those children into this country. Secretary Clinton said, send them back.
The Koch brothers have just paid to put up an ad praising Senator Sanders.
The secretary says it doesn't influence her. Well, that's what every politician says who gets money from special interests.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for listening. Those, of course, sounds from last night's Democratic presidential debate in Miami, courtesy of Univision. Now, Bernie Sanders' unexpected win in Michigan this week has pollsters thinking that maybe they misunderstood the electorate there. And at the same time, that misunderstanding could play out in future voting states like Ohio and Illinois coming up just next week. But is there a bigger problem in election polling than just the one Michigan case? Response rates and sample sizes have plummeted in the last 20 years as fewer, especially younger voters, use the landline telephones that many pollsters use to reach voters. And conducting a poll costs more than ever. But the news media, the voters and the candidates, well, they stay hung up on the numbers.
CNN, he gets 15. That means 85%, based on what you're saying, of the people don't dig you, number one. Is that a correct statement? How do you get 15? Are you at 15 in the new CNN poll? Do you believe in CNN?
There's Donald Trump talking about his rival Senator Ted Cruz at the last Republican debate. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about how the news media covers polls. But first, was Michigan a fluke, or are pollsters really missing bigger trends as they try to adjust to new technology? Joining me now is Michael Ramlett, co-founder and CEO of Morning Consult, a technology company and public opinion polling firm based in Washington, D.C. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So lessons learned after action review, I guess they call it. What did the pollsters get wrong in Michigan? How were they so very wrong and why?
I think what's amazing is we're not actually learning anything new. I think we actually knew this from 2012 as early as 2008, which is that live telephone and automated telephone polling is essentially on life support. You might as well pronounce it dead. Because at this point, you know, increasingly there's fewer and fewer Americans that are willing to answer their phones. 36% of Americans would respond to a poll in 1997. That was down to 9% in 2012. I have to imagine that is even lower today here in 2016. What we're finding is that the old school pollsters, the traditional way of doing it, doesn't work. And I think what's amazing to us, and you know, we're a technology company, we've had chances to collaborate with the New York Times, we do polling for Vox Media, for Fortune magazines, we're just shocked that it's taken this long for people to realize that maybe I can't continue to do something that's getting a worse and worse sample. And so to me, Michigan is just, it's not even the canary in the coal mine. Basically, they've been getting it wrong for the better part of the last 6 months. Almost all of these polls underestimated Donald Trump. None of them were there early to identify the surge with Bernie Sanders. I think what you're finding is just, you know, these are more like weather forecasters than meteorologists. And it turns out there's an actual science behind polling.
And they got the Iowa caucuses wrong as well. We shouldn't forget that.
Yeah, I mean, the caucuses are always tough because those are states where you're really focused on the turnout models. But a state like Michigan, you have a pretty diverse state and it's a large population. So they really should be able to do larger samples. I mean, basically what's happening, you kind of introed it at the beginning, is that with fewer people answering the phone, it's more and more expensive to conduct polling because you have to call more and more households. Well, if it's more and more expensive, then you're going to get fewer and fewer people in these samples. So pollsters are oftentimes only interviewing 400 Republicans, which means you have a bigger margin of error. But also there's this issue of they're not interviewing enough African-American, Hispanic, Arab Americans. And as a result, when they go to then weight the samples, so essentially for your audience, pollsters way to sample to either what the current population survey is, what they think a likely voter model is. But when they go to weight the sample, they're drawing upon maybe 10, 15, 20 African-Americans who responded to that poll and then weighting it up. So it's not surprising, I think, that we see increasingly pollsters using the old school methodology are finding it harder and harder to go find representative samples.
How should voters, viewers digest all of this? The news coverage won't go away. We can't say that polls are useless because they're not completely useless, but we also can't say they're dispositive. So how should we watch them?
I think that you have to focus on the innovative side of where public opinion polling and market research is going. I think what you're going to find is over time here, the polling and market research market, it's going to get better with election forecasting. But because it's less expensive to do this online and through mobile polling, you're also going to have a more diverse set of topics. American public should be really excited about where polling's going. But at the end of the day, they just have to be critical. They can't rely on, oh, I'm just going to vote because, you know, I'm told that this is who's expected to win. They have to vote because this is who they support and who they believe in. And I think what we actually see is that despite all of this media chaos here about, you know, there's too much reporting on polling, what we find is that people don't necessarily shift. So we did a major project with 538, which is Nate Silver's publication, mm-hmm. does a lot of election forecasting. What we did was we re-interviewed the same Republicans before the Iowa caucuses, after the Iowa caucuses, before the New Hampshire primary, after the New Hampshire primary. You might expect that because the polls were wrong about Trump's support in Iowa, that all of a sudden Trump voters would then shift. And what we found is there wasn't dramatic shifts. So perhaps maybe the polls are just really good at providing content for on-air segments and not actually instructive in how voters are likely to move.
And so if voters are watching polls on cable news, grain of salt is a cliche. Don't let them sway you. Maybe the methodology is flawed. Michael Ramlett, co-founder and CEO of Morning Consult, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
You've been weighing in on political polls and whether they influence your vote.
Sometimes people wait to see what other people are thinking as a shortcut to making their own decisions and actually reviewing all the facts and coming up with decisions on their own.
From Olympia, Washington, polls may influence me subconsciously. I feel they do hurt the process because they encourage herd mentality and they discourage critical thinking.
Political polls don't affect the way I vote because I research the candidates for myself. However, I fear that polls often do influence the way others vote. Many people want to be on the perceived winning team. For this reason, I'm not sure that they are helpful.
We got this from Minnesota. Polls don't influence me, but they do influence my husband. He voted for Donald Trump at the caucus because, quote, he's going to win anyway. I can't help but think that this is how a lot of Americans vote. I don't believe you should vote for who you think is going to win. You should vote for whomever you think is best for the job. You can weigh in on this or any conversation. The number is 8778-MY-TAKE. You can leave us a comment at facebook.com/thetakeaway. As unpredictable and unpredictive as political polling can be, that doesn't stop the news media from thriving on it.
We've heard a lot this week about the latest Gallup poll, which shows Governor Romney with his greatest national lead to date over the president. And for the first time, it shows Governor Romney's support tops 50%. That's brand new, with his lead over the president outside the margin of error.
Fox News' Shepard Smith there just 2 weeks before Election Day in 2012. Exact same issues as today. Why was the polling so bad then? Why didn't Mitt Romney perform as well as the polls said he would? Now, everyone in the news media said maybe we shouldn't rely on polls so much for reporting on these elections. Lessons learned? Not really. It seems like lessons repeated. Here we are again in the 2016 election cycle, asking a lot of the same questions. And beyond how the news media covers the polls, do polls simply measure how people really feel? Or do they have their own influence over the very voters they're supposed to be sampling? Michael Traugott is professor at the Center for Political Studies at the University of Michigan. Professor Traugott, welcome.
Hello.
We're in a situation where everybody seems to know that individual polls especially, but polling in general, are not always terribly reliable, but they get reported as news every single day. So what's wrong with the incentives here?
Well, like any other consumer product, in polling you get what you pay for. And there are pressures, economic pressures, on news organizations who are the primary sponsors of polls to cut costs or keep them to a minimum, and this often affects the quality of the polling, and that in turn can affect the quality of the estimates.
And once the polls are out, is it simply the case that it's a quick, easy headline, discussion topic, go with it, report the poll?
Well, there's been a tendency over the last few decades for election coverage to continually emphasize what we call horse race journalism, reporting on who's ahead and who's behind. And polling naturally fits into that tendency because the data showed not only the current standing of the candidates, but how it might have shifted since the last poll was conducted.
Except that often it doesn't necessarily reflect the current standing of the candidates, and there can be this feedback effect. And I want to ask you about that. Do polls merely reflect public opinion? It seems like they do a lot to shape it. I always notice how hard campaigns work sometimes to show reporters that they're leading in the polls. They want people to know that.
Well, it's always better to be ahead than behind. And sometimes polls are used strategically by the campaigns. The central issue with polling is that properly conducted and reported, they give the public a voice in the campaign coverage that otherwise they wouldn't have. Typical coverage would involve interviews with political leaders and strategists who obviously have a partisan message. If the polls focused on issues and how the candidates were, how the electorate was responding to the candidates, that would be a positive thing. But if they just report who's ahead and who's behind, that isn't very useful.
But what do we know about the way polling results affect voter behavior, sort of the inverse of what you'd expect? When somebody's way ahead in the poll, what do we know about how people react to that?
When the polls show that one candidate is way far ahead, they can affect turnout because the supporters of the winning candidate feel as though their vote isn't necessarily as valuable as it might be, and it's not necessary to go to the polls. But on the other hand, if the polls show that it's a very tight race, they can stimulate turnout. It all depends upon the context of the given race.
Is there also sort of a bandwagon effect that we know about where if people see one candidate ahead, they kind of psychologically want to be on the winning team?
There are actually two effects, Todd. One is a bandwagon effect and one is an underdog effect. We can measure these in laboratory experiments. The bandwagon effect is the tendency of some people, usually uncommitted and uninvolved voters, to support the candidate who's ahead. And the underdog effect is the consequence of voters supporting somebody who is behind. They're very difficult to measure in the real world because, of course, they counteract each other in a particular poll.
So, Professor, what do you do? What's your advice for a news consumer watching poll after poll today, questioning maybe the accuracy of those polls and not wanting to be coerced into a bandwagon effect?
One point is that we're trying to inform citizens to the best of our ability about how to interpret poll results and what kinds of things to look for in the methodology. It's just as important to be educating reporters about what good polls are in terms of their methodology and trying to keep the bad polls out of the news stream.
Michael Traugott, professor at the Center of Political Studies at the University of Michigan. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd.